unfortunately.
Well, the route we had the bike lane all the way to Newburgh, and then 219 is pretty wide, a couple feet. River Road has a bike lane all the way in, except through downtown Kaiser. Yes.
We do have on the phone, nor will we have the Republican Party of Oregon representative. None was able to be here. We do have on the phone Justin Delaney and Trent Lutz, so those two spots are there. And we will have a representative of CIO here on the phone for vote discussions. I think some people know that Misan has had a physical issue arise that kept her from the last meeting, and so Representative Nicole Brown from her organization will be participating in lieu of her. So that's our lineup for today. As we start the informational meeting, I asked Erin if she would provide us a little bit of an update about our report, executive summary, and status of things, where we are.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of pieces of information to let you know. We met our deadline. We met our requirement for an executive summary. It was distributed to all members of the legislature, to both the House and Senate Rules Committee, and to the presiding officers. We are now in the process of kind of putting together the background of the full report, which will be posted online along with the executive summary. There is one additional piece that several members of the task force had previously talked about a potential of a minority report. That request has formally been made. There is a draft that has been produced that is circulating with those who have made the request. That will come to the committee. Whether you choose to sign on to it or not, that is certainly up to the members of the task force, but that will be included with the noted people who would choosing to sign on to it identified as part of our report. So we are now in that process of getting all those drafts going and ready. If we make a recommendation today or amend our previous recommendation, we will update our report with that information and reflect the work of today's committee.
Okay, well, make sense to folks. I am scheduled to give an update to the Senate Rules Committee tomorrow. I think I indicated that in my email, and so I hope we obviously are not going to have crossed every T or dotted every I in terms of recommendation, in terms of minority report. It would be my intent to be as general as possible, but also reflect what the issues have been and the status of any recommendations that we do have. So that will happen, and we can talk more about that at the end of the meeting if folks want to do that. Okay. Do they have in front of them?
Yes.
All of this? Okay, for informational meeting, side of the meeting. I wanted to make sure that, go ahead, sorry. Open an informational meeting. I now open the informational meeting. Thank you. What would I do without this woman? I tell you. So we put together, what was really meant to be a little bit more of a description than you had already had sent to you, the three different possible constitutional amendments, the one that had been authorized to me to seek to draft. I want to make clear, you may notice that the LC draft refers to 2017. That was the motive of my ability to get things drafted. I did not have the authority, nor as your task force chair alone. As you know, we kind of went through a whole little hysteria about how we could manage to get a bill drafted. It was made clear to me that I will have the opportunity, and it was not too soon for me to make a request of a 2017 draft, so I did so in order to get language that you could have in front of you. Obviously, as we've all talked about the various ways that bills articles can get in front of the legislature, cutting and pasting that into something that might be active in 2016 is not at all impossible. So it's it only says that because that was the mode for council to be able to help me with getting a draft done. We also went back to the proposal that had been brought forward by the League of Women Voters at the last meeting. There was some sentiment. It wasn't all Norm and it wasn't all anybody, but a couple different people had expressed concern that because we ended up with a substitute motion, the ability to, you know, fully debate that proposal perhaps had been foreshortened. We also put in front of you the language of IP 77, which has been filed with Secretary of State's office for the upcoming 2016 election, and two task force members are petitioners on that, and thought that task force should have an opportunity to make sure to look at that. Last night, if people were following their emails, and I'm sure they're all out there, a suggestion of a merger and cut and paste of a couple of these items was made, and some support request made that we add a fourth. So that Aaron was good at, about adding that to the chart. I would say the only difference in terms of how these are presented in this chart that you have in front of you, which I basically created in order to how to keep my notes. So if it's useful to you, wonderful. If it's not useful, don't worry about it. But is that I had made some effort to sort of pull apart the various issues in each of them. You already had the language itself, and you certainly could have some quarrel with my articulation of those, and that's one thing I'd like to see if people are in agreement about. Aaron has virtually taken the language out of the email proposal and put that in and not done that sort of teasing out the different issues to that, so they may look a little bit different, but no intent to hide any balls or anything in that respect. And so I would like to open the discussion and make sure that we cover all four of these and understand what it is that might be a proposal to be considered. And perhaps to start with, if anything, the way they're reflected in this chart is inappropriate or you think misstates what was in the original language of one of them, that would be good to get into the discussion up front so that, you know, we don't continue to look at things that aren't true if I've mischaracterized them. Anybody have anything of that character they want to throw out there? Okay.
So I guess I do have a clarifying question, and I think probably Rob is the best one to answer this. So, Rob, in the email that you sent us last night that's reflected in number four here on the grid chart, it looks like what you're suggesting is if any Oregon constitutional amendment related to campaign contributions were to pass in November, presumably November of 2016, that would, no matter what it was, that would trigger a timeline on Measure 47 taking effect. Was that your intention?
The constitutional amendment related to political spending, but contribution limits. Yes, it would be. Yeah.
Okay. Not just the one
not,
that you
not
laid
just
out.
SGR 5-2. Okay. No. Correct.
Any other clarifying things that folks want to know about? I'd kind of like to make sure that we've run through the issues. Out of the first three, we are talking about amending Section 8, Article 2 of the State Constitution in the LC, which is based on SJR 5. In the League of Women Voters proposal, it was adding a new Section 25 to Article 2. And the initiative petition also took that issue, handled that issue that way. I don't know, Rob, that you articulated you were talking about potentially referring back to the LC draft, and so it would then go back to an amendment of Article 2, Section 8. Is there anything about that that provokes any discussion?
Yes, I was somewhat curious about this, too. We have two different possible locations, and I would argue maybe we should consider three, doing it in Article 1, Section 8. But what would the ramifications be of placement in these various sections? Does it really not matter, or is there something substantive there?
Question.
Well, maybe I don't. I could ask the two folks who were on the petition whether the move of adding a new Section 25 versus amending Section 8 was amending Section 8 was a significant. Was there a purpose around that that you can help us with? Okay, Norman, if you want to answer.
I'll give it a try. I first wanted to thank you, Secretary, for bringing all four of these proposals forward. I was feeling like we had run out of time in our last meeting, and there was more discussion we probably should have had, and hopefully this will make up for it. Thank you. As far as which section, I'm not sure it makes a lot of difference. The Legislative Council certainly thought it made a difference, and that's why they proposed Article 2, Section 8. Having an amendment to any section of Article 2 probably will have just about the same effect, in my opinion, but I'm not a constitutional lawyer, and the decision would probably ultimately depend on what the Oregon Supreme Court actually had to say about it. So I guess I'm answering by saying I don't know for sure, but I think it won't make any difference.
But I suppose in a little emergency, try to get counsel up to say what they think the best opportunity is. Obviously, they made that choice when SDR5 was drafted. I don't know whether it's a significant difference for folks in terms of folks who would not like to move a referral forward or those who would choose among those and like to move one forward, whether there's something about that issue that's important, you know, to their support of the proposal. If it turns out to be kind of a legalistic, who's the best guess at what will be clearest in terms of interpretation?
I would suggest for our purposes today, it probably does not matter, but it is something that I'd like to hear an opinion from counsel on.
Okay.
And maybe that's something that the legislature will want to delve into also. So it may not matter what we do today in that matter.
Anything you all want to tell us about the choice that was made in the IP as to why?
I guess I can comment a little bit about what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it really does matter a lot where it is, other than when it is referred to voters, there might be some. It might be easier to get it in one section versus another. I kind of like the idea of keeping it separate from other clauses, like any free speech provisions, because I think it's not actually really a free speech topic. It's a anti-corruption, anti-bribery topic. So I think it stands alone. That's just my basic thought on that.
Article 2 is the does contain the rules with respect to elections as opposed to Article 1, which
yeah.
In the past has been sought to be amended.
And Kyle brought up have more. Article 1. Yeah.
And I would prefer a location there, because otherwise it seems strange that you have one clause saying you have the right to free speech, and then somewhere totally separate, oh, by the way, you don't for this. Because on a first reading of just the Bill of Rights, you wouldn't know. I think that's a little bad.
I mean, I don't think that we're hiding it. It's still in our Constitution. Yes, just in a section of what pertains to elections. I kind of agree with what Mr. Woolley was saying about that.
Yeah. Well, there is another example of this. The Bill of Rights has a section about the right to jury trial in civil cases, but it turns out that only applies if the amount is $750 or more because of a different section in a different article. But again, on our first reading, you can't tell. You have to go hunting to figure out what your rights really are. And that's unfortunate.
You can see it on the first reading of the whole thing, though.
It's an awful lot of reading.
So those will be items that you'll consider if you get to the place where there is a group that wants to feels it's appropriate to make a referral for a constitutional amendment, and you make those choices. That'd be one issue that you'll be thinking about as you decide whether that's something you can support or not. It's a little bit more still in the line of, I think, you know, just sort of how you write it. We have the specific language in the SJR 5 about allowing limits on contributions reimposed by the Legislative Assembly or by the people through initiative process. I think that's implied in the others, or is there anything that actually... and specifically in the League of Women Voters provide. I don't think IP 77 speaks to that question. I'm not assuming that's a significant issue for people as they're looking at this, but if it is, they should make arguments to their cohorts at this point. Again, the fourth one would repeat the language in the first, but that's another issue that varied among things. So obviously one very specific, and Diane raised, or Senator Rosenbaum raised the question in terms of clarifying for the fourth one, is that earlier past limits would be overridden because of the LC 137 would be prospective only. In the League of Women Voters proposal, the recommendation was that if that were to pass in 2016, and this would be part of the constitutional thing in that proposal as opposed to separate, that the ballot measure 47 limits would be stayed until the filing period for candidates opens in the primary election. I'm checking with my elections experts, that's generally a September date in the odd-numbered year that it's now timed when things are opened for that. So obviously that was designed, or I'm assuming that was designed to allow for the 2017 legislature to take action. But if they didn't, then those would be the reigning principles that would come into play with that. IP 77, I interpreted that language to not make any statement about specific statement about Measure 47 limits, but it would because it would not have the language of being prospective, it clearly could give rise to them becoming immediately constitutional, right? In terms of the distinctions, so. And again, Rob's sort of counterproposal there was a SJR 5 type language with a similar timing of, but done legislatively instead of being part of the constitutional amendment. Do you want to speak to that? What would be the advantage of having two pieces have to get through the legislature, the referral and legislation?
Well, looking at the Dash 2 amendments, excuse me, I'll just call it SJR 5 because I remember that easier than LCW 137. Right now, I guess I have a hard time supporting that because of the provision that eliminates a voter passed contribution limit. So by severing it into, but I understand the concern. I get the concern that people have about it as well. And I personally think a very strong case could be made for significantly higher limits than 47 now has. So this allows contribution, this number four would allow the contribution limits, just SGR 5 would, without touching expenditures or the other things that the other two have. It doesn't mean people have to choose, voters don't have to choose between the two policies that are contained in here, which the first is, yes, let's have some contribution limits, and number two, yes, let's get rid of the vote, the contribution limits we now have. I would find it somewhat ironic that this campaign finance task force's only recommendation to the legislature would be to eliminate the only campaign finance law that is now on the books. So by splitting it two, we give the ability to do some contribution limits in the future. And by the way, till 18, there would be no contribution limits in place unless the legislature passed them. But it gives the 2017 legislature up through September of 2018 to sit down, figure out what a consensus contribution limits would look like. And then they could pass them legislatively. It doesn't require an approval of the people like some other proposals have. The legislature could go ahead and get together and make these decisions and what's an appropriate number. And they would own that, obviously. They would own that. But we would not have a lapse of contribution limits going forward. If SDR 5-2 were to be passed, there's no guarantee there'd be any contribution limits for 5 or 10 years. Cynically, some people may say that's the likely result, because consensus is really hard to reach on this. I totally get it. In fact, listening to Justin Delaney during some of our conversations, he swayed me to a certain extent that limits should be relatively high to stop some of the dynamics that he's concerned with. So maybe it's a little riskier politically to break this down into two, but I think it's the right way to do it for those reasons. We don't force voters to make a decision between two priorities here in one vote, yet it gives the legislative process time to work and come up with a consensus number without unduly delaying reforms that I think the campaign finance task force is trying to get a handle on. So that's my thinking for it. It may very well, people may feel it's too risky, I get that, but I think it's a better way to do it. And like I say, I've got a hard time with the dash two, because it eliminates the only campaign finance task force statute that's now in the books. So I have a hard time with that. So that's why I sort of kicked this around a little bit.
Another discussion of that particular issue or elucidation people want?
Well, I agree with his sentiment, obviously.
I think I may have made this comment indirectly, but I just want to say, Rob, that my concern about this proposal number four, even though I see your argument that there needs to be some kind of hammer over the legislature, you know, basically a deadline saying you need to do something by September of 2018 or something will happen, but I'm uncomfortable putting that deadline out and then saying if any version whatsoever gets into the Constitution that says anything about campaign contributions without even language in front of us. I mean, it could be something that nobody's ever talked about here or suggested, because that's why I was asking you, would this kick in if something that hasn't been presented to this task force or filed legislatively or through the initiative process were to happen? And your answer was yes, it would. So to me, it's kind of a pig in a poke to say.
To address that, I think that I'm not exactly clear why that would be a problem, honestly, unless you want Measure 47 to go into effect right away. But if you want to have some delay, it seems to me that if some were to file a petition different than what's already been filed, but something that deals with campaign contribution limits, the breathing, if it should pass, The legislature may want that breathing room regardless of what it is. However, if that does make you feel uncomfortable, obviously this isn't set in stone. It's more of an idea than it is a inalterable proposal. And certainly, I think the legislature, we could agree to tie that in to the recommendation, that it's specific to anything written by, referred by legislature to the ballot in November. So I don't have a problem with that. I thought that was something that maybe would be politically more acceptable in case, for instance, IP 77 were to pass. That would give some breathing room. So I thought that was actually beneficial to the legislature. But if you don't think it is, I get that. And I'm not a legislator, so I don't understand the whole dynamics. But I have no problem with changing that to say it's tied into whatever the task force recommends or a legislative referral specifically.
I think, you know, what I like about number one, number four is that, you know, obviously number one is just the amendment, and then number four is the amendment with the statutory hammer that Senator Rosenbaum was referring to. I think, you know, whatever we refer to the legislature, it's up to the legislature to decide what they want to do with what we put forward. And they can pass it, they can change it, they can, you know, let it go. It's up to them. But I think the basic core principle that right now we have a constitution that prevents any limits whatsoever to be put in place, even on very narrow topics, is a problem. It's a problem that a lot of Oregonians have been very clear about, that they want changed. And I think the core principle of number four and number one is the same, is that we should remove that barrier one way or the other and allow the democratic process to take place where people can, and legislators can consider putting parameters in place to reform their elections. And so the basic principle that we need to get rid of that constitutional barrier is why I think number four and number one are both really strong proposals. The legislature can kind of really do what they wish with number four and number one. And they can adopt the statute or not, but I mean, for me, the principle really matters about let's remove this barrier that's in the Constitution that is outdated with our current elections.
If I could just, for the record, come back to the very beginning of what Rob had to say and acknowledging the reality and heartfeltness of if the only thing that the task force recommended were something that overrides the one thing that we have in place, only for purposes of saying what decisions made today are what the task force recommends for 2016 for now. It is not necessarily the end of the road, no matter what, and I'm going to keep saying that because it's very important that we don't characterize decisions that we're trying to make about possible action, you know, for the 2016 session and all the challenges that that has versus what we've finalized as recommendations forever. Your willingness to go along with me on that.
So, Secretary Atkins, I certainly agree, and I want to point out that not only would including a delay of Measure 47 would be pressure on the legislature, but it also be pressure on this task force, that we would have to come up with some recommendations to the 2017 legislature that made sense and everybody, or at least a majority of us, would be able to agree with and would be a some sort of comprehensive reform for the state. So
I think the issues that you're listening to are good ones, and you know, this is a Benjamin, so let me just make sure that we get to all of them, of the differences among these. The LC 137 and the additional one related to that really only addresses contribution limits. Does not the other two proposals speak to expenditure limits as well as authorized expenditure limits as well as contribution limits. And also go a step further around allowing requirements for additional public disclosure. I think we've identified that as the fact that while reporting is required, the kind of disclosure on campaign mailings and so forth is not. So that's a substantive difference between going one direction or another. And make sure that that's clear in people's heads as they think about which things they might be willing to support. And if anybody wants to make a case for adding more or keeping with contributions, now's your chance.
Well, as I was looking at these, what I ended up doing for clarity is I made sort of a menu, a table, and had all the options and what they would do.
Great minds think alike, Mr.
Yeah. Something that we could consider doing is just looking at the potential items of change and just seeing how much support there is for a change of that nature. And then we could consider requiring disclosures on communications, allowing for expenditure limits versus contribution limits. These could all be considered separately, and then we could find whatever is the most popular and synthesize something at the end for that.
So there's a small issue with that maybe they're related to each other. And so if you try to make them orthogonal, maybe the hydro, what are we calling it? The
hydraulics.
The hydraulic effect.
Yeah.
Would be left out. Although you could add an item that says these two together.
Yeah.
And maybe there's somebody else who wants to speak to this. My assumption has been that, at least in part, or in some people's minds, adding an item, adding the authority to require greater disclosure to the voters, is one of the possible ways of responding to the whole issue of independent expenditures, which is of great concern to everybody, I think, on some level, but to others on a greater level in terms of their willingness to support the authority to establish limits being established. And I want to acknowledge that, or I think maybe I'm speaking for nobody who, so maybe there wasn't anybody who thought of it in those terms, but I do think the disclosure piece was, in our discussions, considered to be one of the ways that we might be able to impact on the third-party side, even though it's been a fairly limited amount of that, allowable under the U.S. Constitution.
I think we've brought up a lot of issues, and before we scatter in all directions, I'd like to, if I could, to bring it back to the issues of different kinds of limits, because as I read these, I saw that options 1 and 4 would not prohibit limits, contribution limits for recall and ballot measure committees, but options 2 and 3 would. Is my understanding of that correct, and should we have some discussion about that distinction?
Help me out to what language in which
it was that.
On that.
So the language, for instance, of prohibiting contributions made in connection with campaigns for nomination or election to public office is clearly about candidates. Okay. And the more general language, which I don't have in front of me, unfortunately, would apply to all sorts of elections, whether it's for election to office or anything else.
Very good. Yep, that's one I didn't pull out as a distinction. So we do understand this sort of these two preclude
options for nomination.
I don't know if we call, but.
Well, no, not quite, because both proposals 2 and 4 refer to the U.S. Constitution, and currently, those kinds of limits are not permitted on ballot measures through the U.S. Constitution. I don't think that may ever be permitted. And so,
3 also says.
Yeah, I said.
Refers to the Constitution.
Did I say 2 and 3 is what I was trying to say? So we're really saying we would permit limits in Oregon to the extent that the U.S. Constitution would be, permit them. And it's very unlikely that there would be any limits on ballot measures in the foreseeable decades.
So I think then the difference would be a prospective one, that if First Amendment law changes, then these things would become allowed automatically. Is that the intent?
Yes, that was the intent. To go as far as we can within the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
Again, another issue to think about as you approach the decision.
I had a question related actually to that. Two of the provisions, numbers 2 and 3, had language that in some form incorporated the federal First Amendment, and the other two did not. And is that a meaningful distinction, or does that happen anyway? Do we need that language or not?
I think it's clear that it happens anyways. Yeah. Most people.
I think council would agree. We had that conversation, I think, maybe not in front of everybody, but I think council did not see the need, did not place it in the original SJR because U.S. Constitution always trumps in that respect. My assumption was with the IP77 that it had my brain is forsaking me and I don't remember what it was, but that it had a little bit different effect. Maybe not. Not sure it's a distinction that's a difference. So those were the kind of the major things that I had identified, and Kyle's obviously added a couple. Are there other things that draw your attention about what's different between these as we're going to approach?
A couple of other things that are different. And we talked about this at our meeting in December. But so what we're looking at today is number 2 and number 3 both deal with expenditures, which in my understanding has consistently been ruled unconstitutional, although I get that we're bumping up against constitutionality on everything. And then my other point would be the term true sources, which is used both in Norman's original proposal and is reflected in IP77, to my knowledge, has no legal meaning. It's a term I haven't seen used before. I don't know what it means. I don't think there's any instruction to the courts for how to interpret that, and it concerns me that we would put what lawyers would call unconstitutionally vague language into our Constitution. So I just have that concern, is that it would be really hard to interpret what that term even means.
What's the ambiguity, if I may ask? I mean, you say it's not defined, but it's just two English words that are like...
Right. I think the word true is exactly the word that probably people who argue these matters spend their lives trying to arrive at. Whether something's true source goes back to some principle that's not stated here would be very, very difficult for a court to interpret. And I mean, I'd be curious if our legal counsel has any opinion about that. But I mean, I'm not a lawyer, and I didn't go to law school, but just the term itself has no definition or meaning. So we're obviously trying to chart new ground, but my goal all along has been to support something that has the best chance of being passed by voters and upheld by the courts. And I think putting language that will will make that difficult. It's not a good idea.
It's a real well-regulated militia.
Oh, please. We have enough problems. There are issues that we don't need to take up here.
No, I get it. I take your point.
I have a hunch about what the true sources is intended to mean, but I share your concern that I can't tell on the face of it what it does mean. But at our November meeting in the exhibits, there was a proposal attached for something that would require disclosure on communications from elections, and it wanted to have some provisions to look through where your money came from to say, well, where, not only who did you get your money from, but where did they get it from? So I think it's an attempt to try to get rid of the veil of secrecy by pipelining money through several sources to reach its original origin, whatever that means. And I think to do that would be a gigantic burden, because if I'm given a donation, I don't necessarily know where the person that gave it to me got their money from. But I think that's what it was intended to try to ferret out.
I think its also intent was, is that Oregon's one of the few states that doesn't have pay-for bylaws, so you don't have to say, as you do in federal races, on campaign literature, you know, this sign, you know, yard sign, for instance, paid for by, you know, someone running for office or whatever candidate it is. A lot of federal races require that. A lot of state races require that. Some states have, like, the top five donors listed on campaign materials. Oregon is constitutionally barred from doing that, according to Attorney General ruling in the early 2000s. And so I think part of it was also to provide legal cover for paid-for-by statements to be put in place.
Right.
I would have made the same assumption about the intent, partly, particularly with the initiative petition, talking about transfer of money as well, trying to get at. I do acknowledge that's not something that we've explored as a task force or gotten a lot of legal advice or analysis about, given the question of whether or not we recommend something to be taken up very quickly by a very short legislative session. I'm thinking, this is something that is should we at some point want to move forward. The task force could have a lot more analysis of and look at, but it's going to be a little bit tough to do now. I also noted in my notes about this that the transfer of money or resources to influence also applied to sort of expenditures and contributions are both potentially being limited here, and that a little bit more complexity around getting to sources of funds on the expenditure side as well as on the contribution side, you know, would add to this all. Not to say that it isn't, we wouldn't ultimately find that to be a good idea, but some complexity that would bear diving down into. I think that we haven't had an opportunity to dive down into. Yes. I'm sorry. Oh, Seth, sorry.
So regarding the true source point, I mean, there is a Texas election code discusses true source of communication. The voterrighttoknow.org, motherjones.com all talk about true source in relation to dark money nonprofits. I think it's an already well-established term and that people know about, because it's already in another law already. The first hit of election true source on Google is Texas's statute.
So what interpretations there might be? We would probably want to know what interpretations there have been of that to see how far back is it going.
So as far as true sources are concerned, I think you have a point, Senator. And I think the short answer is that statute will have to define that in this state as it's applied in the state. and how deep we go into contributions or expenditure will be defined in that statute. And we have to, over time, work that out. And it, even if it gets into law, it's not necessarily set in stone like it is in the Constitution, that we can, in statute, always change it. It's like computer software. You can always change it later.
I would thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. I have a problem with the true sources. It may or may not be accepted. But the skullduggery that can be involved in campaigns aside, I think Senator Rosenbaum has a good point. I have trouble with the term. We all want to know more about the influence. We want to avoid the bribery and so forth. But Seth, if you're running for office and I give you $100, maybe Aaron gave it to me a month ago. Maybe she gave me $100 for my bill on a state dog. I don't know.
But this is an impossible thing to ever happen.
Yes. I got a little.
In Oregon, you're not allowed to like fence donations like that.
Like, right. But the true source is, in fact, me. There may be other true sources, but I signed up, filled it out, and gave it to you. It's a very complex term, true sources. And it also brings up the point of how confusing and how complicated many of the things that we talk about are, which also points to the difficulty of the short session. But I'm glad the senator brought this up. I am not a lawyer either, but I played one in a commercial once, but I think it's a problematic term that needs to be sorted out before it's simply accepted.
Well, the point about statute covering it, I think a lot of these proposals are actually, in their constitutional form, very broad, and they're not necessarily intended to, when they get implemented, to always be exactly that broad. So when you actually pass something that deals with it, then you narrowly construe what you want. But you could spend all day writing, you know, 8 paragraphs on what true sources actually means in the Constitution. I don't think that's what people really want to see in their Constitution. I mean, there's a provision against dueling. How do you define what a duel is?
You could a long time ago.
Was a common understanding, and so.
Yeah, there's many provisions of the Oregon Constitution that are not implemented in statute, and so don't have any effect at all.
Respectfully, I think probably the distinction to be made as you're thinking about these, I'm not speaking in support of either one or the other, but is whether the very general language here still to be interpreted, and certainly choices about what that limit, what those limits might look like, as contrasted with introduction of some newer concepts, newer terms that might take a life of their own, or would clearly have to be understood, and what would be the intent that the legislature had should they refer it would be important. So those are, I think, some of the distinctions as you look at them.
I don't think the word true really adds a lot to this proposal, and I wouldn't mind just dropping the word myself. Whether it says true sources or just sources of contributions and so on, it probably will have the same effect when it gets into statute.
Wasn't the IP already filed?
That case has already been filed.
The IB is filed.
IB7 is filed, but yeah. I'm talking about proposal two.
Madam Chair, I would say it is important to have it in there, with all due respect, Norm, that because a source might be a 501c4, the true source might be people behind the 501c4, and that's where you get to the true source versus the source of the money.
I understand.
Although you could define it by statute any way you wanted, I get that, too. And I also don't think we have constitutional problems with the language. I think there's some constitutional interpretation that may have to occur should the legislature pass certain statutes that require the Supreme Court to step in and determine whether it's constitutional or not. But as Seth says, the Constitution is usually a relatively broad document that covers general principles, and then you have statutes, rules making that implement that within the bounds of the constitutional boundaries, which is what this would do, and the legislature certainly would have to come up with some statutory language that implemented this particular provision, which states have done all over the country. So there are models that the legislature, staff, interested parties could look at for the enabling statutes that would come into place if this were to be passed. That being said, I'm frankly not here necessarily to defend IP 77 because the temperature of the room probably isn't that high over it. So that's all I need to say on the truth. I don't think it's a problem constitutionally. There may be some case law that comes up based on some enabling statutes that's enacted. I don't think we can guess what that's going to be. I have confidence that the legislature can enact some constitutionally valid statutes. Question for you, though, off the subject a little bit. To pass any recommendations by the task force, are we going to need 9 votes today? Okay.
I want to make sure that folks are clear on as clear as we can be about what the various proposals are. But I'm also not excited to extend discussion if it's not of interest to folks. The task at hand, as much as we might like to continue to edit and think about, is in a very short time window to either recommend or not a referral. Those are the only proposals on the table, is to recommend a referral of one of these, suggests a referral and a companion statute to go with it. And I don't think further parsing or editing of any of these really is going to stand us in very good stead. We've got to land, or the group has to land. And the first question, and we're not going to move to work session quite yet. I will take a little break in case people want to breathe. But my intent would be, as we come back into a work session, to ask the question, as opposed to move any one of these in particular and start the discussion from there, but rather to, as I indicated in the mailing that went to you all, to see whether there are 9 votes for recommending a referral of any kind, and then seeing whether there are 9 votes for any or all of these. And I don't know, where we will end up if we end up with, tie votes and some combination has to happen. I'll panic at that moment and we'll figure out what to do next. But I think it's time to kind of call the question as to whether there's a desire to move forward with that. We do know that we have members opposed to that, but I'd really like to just see whether or not we need to continue to move forward with this. So with that, I'm going to close the informational meeting, and I'm going to give us about a few minutes of a break.
Kind of just a quick comment before we move on. Mm-hmm. If the intent of the true sources is to give the potential ability to unmask anonymous donors of 501c4s, we should be really upfront about that.
Okay.
And because we were saying earlier that we think maybe true doesn't mean anything. Well, I think you've said it does. Thank you.
A lot of questions the group has not yet wrestled to the ground. Yeah, can we take a 5-minute break and
sure.
Okay, we're in recess. Thank you for the patience of you folks on the phone. We are going to get somebody else on the phone.
You're important, right?
Okay, we'll open the work session for today, and want to identify that Nicole Brown has joined us on the phone, replacing Mushan for CIO. So thank you for doing that, and she has been in discussion with her organization about these things, so we will have another.
And who is it? What's her name?
Nicole Brown.
Nicole Brown?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She's here for me, so.
So I appreciate you going along with me on what this process might be. It seems to me the efficiency and our need to get a decision done, that we need to discover first whether there is a 9 votes that might be in favor of any kind of referral being put forward, and then whether one of the specific ones has 9 votes. My intention is to ask about all of them and to allow you to vote for all 4 or 2 or the only the one. At least we will know at that point, kind of as we move forward, where the issues are or where the challenges are in that respect. And I again tell you that not all things die if we don't respond to the legislature's offer that we could recommend legislation to them in this 2016 session. I had the pleasure of updating all the other statewides actually on what we were doing today, and I said, oh, we live until July of 2017, I hope we will continue to develop our record, whether we do or we don't, and whether the legislature asks or doesn't ask. So I am going to ask that we call the roll, and the first question is whether or not you would be willing to support a constitutional referral be recommended to the legislature as part of our report. How many would support or oppose moving a recommendation to the legislature to consider a constitutional referral? And that's in a generic question. So answer it as you will. We'll call the roll. Thank you, Zoe.
Yes, aye.
Mr. Turow?
Yes.
Mr. Rosenfeld?
No.
Mr. Markley?
No.
Mr. Lutz? Mr. Lukow?
Yes.
So, Trent's on the phone.
Trent?
You muted yourself, Trent. We're not hearing you.
No, sorry. Oh,
thank you. Okay, sorry.
This is Nicole Brown. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Can we go back to Daniel for a second?
Mr. Lukow.
Yes.
Thank you.
Ms. Kwan?
Yes. Keep going.
Ms. Hughes?
Excused.
Excused.
Mr. Harris?
Yes.
Ms. Fisher?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Delaney?
No.
Excused.
Representative Gilliam?
No.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Senator Boquist?
Excused.
Chair Atkins?
Yes, aye.
The ayes are support, right?
Would be willing. Would support or oppose? Would support moving a recommendation to the legislature to consider a constitutional referral. Zoe, what's our total? Let's not trust our own marks here.
Mm-hmm. 5 against.
24.
3 absent. That's 8. 8.
Okay, so we should go on to the next question.
Yeah. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have 9 ayes, 5 noes, and 3 are excused. So you have your majority.
So we'll go on to the next question.
Could we just make sure that we know who voted how? Because I know this came up last time and there was some confusion about votes cast.
Yes. So. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, correct me if I've mismarked you. This is what I have. I have Mr. Woolley voting yes, Mr. Terrell voting yes, Mr. Rosenfeld voting no, Mr. Markley voting no, Mr. Lutz voting no, Mr. Lukow voting yes, Ms. Brown voting yes, Ms. Hughes is excused, Mr. Harris voting yes, Ms. Fisher voting yes, Mr. Ellis voting yes, Mr. Delaney voting no, Representative Rayfield is excused, Representative Gilliam is voting no, Senator Rosenbaum voting yes, Senator Boquist is excused, Chair Atkins voting yes.
And that was just on the generic idea.
Correct.
Should that we refer a constitutional
that
amendment?
That is simply on the question of would you support moving forward with a recommendation, not to a specific recommendation yet.
So the next question would be, what would folks be, how many would support or oppose moving forward with the recommendation of item one, LC 137 draft to the legislature?
Madam Chair, question yes. From the phone.
Yes.
One of the reasons for my opposition is the rush, and I think it's inappropriate to go forward in 2016. Could you, in your motion before the vote, clarify when you're asking for a 2016 referral?
Yes. Yes, it is. And I'm happy to say for the record that the vote was how many would support or oppose moving a recommendation to the 2016 legislature to consider a constitutional referral.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Fair enough. Very good. How many would support or oppose moving item one as a recommendation to the 2016 legislature to consider a constitutional referral? Zoe, could you take the roll?
Mr. Woolley?
Aye.
Mr. Sherrill?
Aye.
Mr. Rosenfeld?
No.
Mr. Markley?
No.
Mr. Lutz?
No.
Mr. Lukow?
Yes.
Ms. Kwan?
Ms. Brown?
Ms. Brown?
Aye.
Thank you.
Ms. Hughes?
Excuse.
Mr. Harris?
Aye.
Ms. Fisher?
Aye.
Mr. Ellis?
Aye.
Mr. Delaney?
No.
Representative Rayfield? Representative Gilliam?
Point of order, Madam Chair.
Certainly.
In the middle of vote, I'm sorry. If we already voted no on number one, should we be polling the noes?
It was actually a hesitation that I had when I started. It was exactly that. As you know, when I outlined the question, I said of those, I was in my own mind as a way of process to get us there, saying of those who would support moving a recommendation, how many would do each one? It is important. It felt, I didn't ask the question of our staff here, and I probably could have. It felt inappropriate to sort of cut people off from participating in that discussion if they didn't want to. But on the other hand, if people perhaps could abstain if they don't want to, I mean, if they've already made their position clear and they don't really want to vote on the specifics of these, that would certainly, would that be a way around that?
Yes.
I just hate to be so negative.
Oh, well, we appreciate that very much.
I'm a no.
It's fair enough. If somebody decides they want to abstain because they've already said what they want to say, that's fine. Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Senator Bofus? Yes. Chair Atkins?
Aye.
Madam Chair, Justin Delaney from the phone again. Sorry for the interruption. I will change my vote to an abstention on option one based on the brilliant clarification from Representative Gilliam. I think number one is the way to go if we eventually get there, but it's an abstention for now. Thank you.
Clarifications?
Madam Chair, I'll change my vote to a yes for this. No to a yes.
I understand. You're kind of changing from none to...
And I'll explain myself after we're done with all the
voting. Okay, very good.
For the record.
Madam Chair, if I might, I'll change to an abstention with that clarification.
Madam Chair, can we do a total vote count on number one?
Announce the vote again.
I'm going to ask staff to do it.
Thank you.
To do that for me.
That was a surprise. The date changes, but I think it's on the norms.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have 10 aye votes, 2 no votes, 2 abstaining on this question, and 3 are excused. With the changes in the last couple of minutes of Mr. Rosenfeld to an aye, Mr. Delaney and Representative Gilliam to abstaining.
So now we're going to be asking those of you who would support moving a recommendation of Proposal 2.
Aye.
Mr. Searle?
Aye.
Mr. Rosenbaum?
Abstain.
Mr. Martin?
No.
Mr. Lutz?
Mr. Lutz?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. No.
Okay, thanks.
Ms. Brown?
Aye.
Ms. Hughes?
Excused.
Mr. Harris?
Aye.
Ms. Fisher?
No.
I think it's
Mr. Ellis?
No.
Mr. Delaney?
No.
Representative Rayfield?
Excuse me.
Representative Gilliam?
Abstain. Mm-hmm.
Senator Rosenbaum?
No.
Senator Bofus? Chair Atkins?
No.
Sorry, you didn't give me a chance to vote. Aye.
What did the Secretary of State vote on?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I have 5 aye votes. 7 no votes, 3 excused, and 2 who abstained does not have a majority.
I'm concerned they might not have been adequately reflected. Okay. Now for your agreement or disagreement with moving forward, item 3.
Mr. Rule?
Aye.
Mr. Turrell?
Aye.
Mr. Rosenfeld?
Abstain.
Mr. Markley?
No.
Mr. Lutz?
No.
Mr. Lucow?
Abstain.
Ms. Brown?
No.
Ms. Hughes?
Excuse me.
Mr. Harris?
Yes.
Ms. Fisher?
No.
Mr. Ellis?
Abstain.
Mr. Delaney?
No.
Representative Rayfield? Representative Gilliam?
No.
Senator Boca? Chair Atkins?
I'm going to abstain on this, and I'll just do my explanation now. It has been filed as an initiative petition in my office, and I'm not going to take a position on it here. It's a great relief on the face of my staff over here.
And,
I don't mean it as a smart aleck move. It's a true one.
And then just for the record, Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's 3 aye votes, 6 no votes, 3 excused, and 5 abstained, did not receive a majority.
Okay, your support or opposition to moving forward, item 4.
Aye.
Mr. Turo?
Aye.
Mr. Rosenfeld?
Aye.
Mr. Markley?
No.
Mr. Lutz?
No.
Mr. Lukow?
Aye.
Ms. Brown?
Aye.
Ms. Fee? Mr. Harris?
Yes.
Ms. Fisher?
No.
Mr. Ellis?
Abstain.
Mr. Delaney?
No.
Representative Gilliam?
Abstain.
Senator Rosenbaum?
No.
Senator Bocas? Chair Atkins?
No.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, we have 6 aye votes, 6 no votes, 3 excused, and 2 abstained, did not receive a majority.
Could I just make a vote explanation?
Sure.
So I just want to be clear, and I said this before, but the reason I voted no on number 4 is because I was voting no on having the clarification that any constitutional amendment that were to pass with voters that dealt with campaign limiting contributions would then kick in Measure 47. That could be something like no unions can contribute to campaigns. Somebody could file that as a constitutional amendment. And I personally, if that were to happen, would not then want to see the Measure 47 limits start to run. So although I could have supported it if it was limited to the constitutional language that was before us, it was not limited to that, and that really compelled me to vote no. So,
well, since that's addressed to me, I'll take the privilege to addressing that back. And as I stated to you, you know, this was developed in an email in my kitchen at 8 o'clock last night. You know, if you had asked me that question and you said, would you make that amendment, I'd absolutely, whatever you want. That'd be fine with me. In fact, we could vote on that right now if it's proper motion-wise to do that, if that would get your support. I sort of thought, like I said, it was a benefit in some ways, but maybe it's not. Maybe it does need to be more tailored to what you see the issues here from your perspective and within the legislature. So that's my explanation to your explanation, and I'd be more than happy to resubmit that with your amendment.
I would support that.
Madam Chair, may I? Oh, this is a good time for us to explain our our thinking for the record.
Sure. Can we let that request sit out there for a minute?
So I voted yes on the first and the fourth but I voted no on the first round of general, and I want to explain what that's about. If you were asking me, I think there's two ways you could look at what we're voting for right now. One is just, should this thing happen? One of these things actually happen, go to the voters and be passed. And on that, I'd be a yes probably on all four of these things. If this was before me and I was a voter, I'd be voting yes. However, I do, if you were asking me what's more true, am I voting on that or am I making a recommendation as a citizen of Oregon to the 90 members of the state legislature and the governor, should this be advanced to the voters, then I think it's not just about what I think. It's about, is this, if it goes to the voters, what is the likelihood of voters going for this? And if it was just going to the voters and they were going up or down on it and there was no money in politics and we would have no reason to be here and all of that stuff, probably that's what would happen. But I've been around long enough to know that it's not as simple as that, and that the coalition that is for and against a measure impacts whether or not a measure will pass. And I've been around also long enough to feel like it's okay to lose in the short run in order to win. Sometimes that's the risk that you take in advancing an issue forward. I feel like this issue in particular, there's not that much room for that. The public really wants to see change, but we have seen efforts time and time again just get stymied, whether it's the courts or politics or whatever. And so the fuse, as it were, for our ability to withstand more very high-profile losses, I think, is short. And hope is the only thing that's really on our side if we want to try to reform the system. And so I do feel some obligation to, if I'm going to recommend to the members of the legislature to put something before the voters, do I feel like voters will go for it? And the one thing that just is problematic for me in that regard, unfortunately, it's a political decision, and I wish it wasn't. And the one thing that's problematic for me is that voters have had a chance to look at this kind of thing, a constitutional amendment, almost 10 years ago. And when I look at who was for it and who was against it then, and I look now, having now spent several months hearing people talk and knowing where people stand, where the coalition is now, who's for it and who's against it, I haven't seen that much of the changes. And so that makes me risk averse. And I just feel the need to express that for the record, that if you were asking me, am I recommending to you to put something before the voters, my inclination would be, unless something changes in who's for it and who's against it, I'd probably be more on the risk averse side. And so that's where my no vote came in initially. But I do feel some also compelled to express where I actually stand on this issue itself. And this vote is not a perfect way to do it. So this is sort of my very imperfect way of expressing what I am now trying to express in words, and hopefully will be on the record.
Appreciate it. So again, knowing we have a question out there to be resolved, are there others that want to talk about the rise? Not that you're not required to, and there will make no judgments about them. Yes.
I just wanted one thing made clear now, which I had made clear before, which is that even though some of the proposals do include overriding or staying, or in some ways one may interpret weakening the existing voter-approved campaign finance reform, Measure 47, I voted yes on all of them because I think it's more important that we get proposals move forward than my opposition to overturning a citizen-enacted statute. And so I continue to support Measure 47. That's it.
I withdraw my request to revote. The votes aren't there anyway, so it's no point in doing it.
All right. I was going to ask you whether you thought they were up. I haven't had a chance to think about it. I think some of the comments have reflected where the unique and kind of challenging roles for the task force members here, and I really appreciate people being willing to finally get down and go yes, no, even though it was a little bit difficult to do. The legislators are completely unsympathetic to you about that because they have to do it all the time, not necessarily knowing everything, you know, that could come out of and what the next stage is going to be. But I do understand and want to acknowledge, and as I report to the Rules Committee, one of my talking points will be folks were appointed to this task force to represent certain interests, and so you have your own, you know, values and judgments that you're bringing to this as Oregonians, but it was set up in a way to bring a good many of the usual suspect organizations to the table and have a good and allow them to choose a representative to come and be part of this. And people, I think, have been constantly trying to think about, you know, the political consequence of this decision or that decision as opposed to the merits of the of the issues. I know that our minority report that will come forward you know, speaks to an issue that probably not anybody here would completely disagree with, and that is that the time that we have had afforded to us before this 2016 session has not allowed us necessarily to do all the research that might actually end up broadening a coalition because of being persuasive. Some folks have talked about being persuaded by some of this conversation, but still people feeling we don't really know what you know, do we have enough information about this or that to know that adverse consequences won't happen, and that's kind of kept people from being willing to join in. It's my hope, I think taking a bare majority recommendation, and I think we have to acknowledge 9-17 is that to the legislature may not have the weight that had, you know, we had, you know, a lot more you know, growing support. We'll see what the legislature does with that, but I will certainly speak to the fact that folks have had have expressed the desire to continue to work on this issue, whether or not and I'm not flagging that I know anything, I'm just telling you I have no idea where the legislature is going to be on this at this point, but that we would like to continue this discussion. If there is an initiative, whether it's IP77 or something that goes forward and is passed, they will look to us to try to evaluate and help what might have to happen in 17, you know, no matter what. So my hope for you all is that you will stick with us and stick at the table. I won't leave until January of 2017, and then you'll have to find somebody else to to do this. But at any rate, I really appreciate your being willing to go through a little bit of an unusual process to get to something that we will. Obviously, anything that goes in writing to the legislature will come to you, and opportunity to object and change and whatever. I hope you will trust me in being asked to update to let people know just kind of the bare bones of where the task force is at this point. And I will acknowledge that there's a substantial number of no votes for some reasons, that as well as I think again a bare majority, but real concern that it would be a good idea to act more quickly than less quickly. So I'll try not to reflect my own position so much as what I'm hearing from all of you.
I have a point of clarification,
yes.
Chair Atkins. So at this point, is it that the report is submitted and then we have an LC draft, but does the LC draft have to be submitted as a bill by the chair of a committee, or what is exactly the next step with the possibilities for this?
To find a path. I believe there will be a path. Yes, I think we can't expect an introduction tomorrow. We will, as I say, I will briefly update Senator Rosenbaum and her committee tomorrow. It's a little odd. And as we will amend our report to include what has happened here today and make sure that the leadership and the rules committees have that, and I will certainly make a request of them that they make their determination of what they're going to do with this recommendation.
Madam Chair, I assume there will be a summary of today's.
Mm-hmm.
And before I make a comment about you, I want to be sure I know you are no longer a resident of my district.
I never was a resident of your district. I did have a condominium there. That's true, yeah. A second residence. That, okay. But I sold it about 3 months ago.
All right, so I can't.
Your market picked up. It was wonderful.
You can't accuse me of pandering.
Okay.
I just think you have been an excellent choice for Secretary of State, and it's proven by the way you've handled yourself in this task force. I'm sorry I couldn't be here for all of them, but I appreciate your leadership very much. And lastly, I wanted to say how impressed I was by Dave and his thoughtfulness in his explanation. Senator Rosenbaum can correct me, but because of that thoughtfulness, I don't think you're ready for the legislature.
Thank you, I think.
Right. I'm hoping we won't be quoted on those subjects, but I can beg the press, but otherwise. Thank you. I appreciate your kind words.
Chair Atkins, just for our information, when do you think we might be meeting again?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, but yeah. I thought it was useful to raise the
question. It is useful to raise the question. I wonder if you could give us the rest of the afternoon and tomorrow to think a little bit about that. If people have suggestions, I really had not looked beyond this meeting.
So. In the legislature, the term is meets at the call of the chair. So.
Yeah, I already understood that.
That's right. I'll try not to be too intrusive of your time or too instantaneous in expectation. If we
have a substantial dispute
over the final report and the minority report, and I feel it's useful to have a discussion, I may ask you to come together to make sure that isn't a final report. And so my assumption is that after the legislative session, we would reorganize and see what might be a next task. I am going to report to the register. You remember that in the executive summary of the report, we did identify certain places where we thought more information and other additional things would be helpful to do. One of the steps that I will likely take is to ask the leadership to kind of reinvest us in that and let us know if there are different things they would like us to do. Hopefully that would be a public document. But unless we have trouble.
Madam Chair, from the phone.
Go ahead.
A quick comment. This
sure.
is Justin. I wanted to thank you as well, but at the same time hope that we continue on. My no votes today are not indicative of a blanket refusal to consider contribution limits. I just think a short legislative session right on the heels of SJR 5 not passing is just not the right time to rush another constitutional amendment out. I do truly hope we get back to also looking at enhancing disclosure and reporting and some of the audit and penalty discussions we had. I think that's the low-hanging fruit, and I sure hope that we get back to those in short order.
Thank you, Justin. Appreciate it. We're adjourned. Appreciate it.